lot of misinformation out there. People think that if outfitters get tags, that's going to take away from what they have on their public land. I saw something at the end of the lake. We thought it was a moose. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, that's definitely not a moose. And then it starts running and it's a bear. Operating on this lottery system where you don't know if you're going to be able to operate that year is insane. And the fact that we're expected to do it that way is also insane. All of us girls are wearing the exact same shirt. And I'm like, that's not me. So, you know, my patterns are bright. They're crazy. They're different. I think it's pretty funny when I'm like, here's your purple chubby, you know, to a client. And they look at me like, wait, what did she just say? Hi, this is Kara Schuett with Yellow Sally and Montana Bucks and Ducks, and you are listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
I would rest at peace for eternity if my legacy was that I made a positive influence on the non-hunting public about what hunters are and what hunting is.
I finally got my buck on our last real day of hunting.
So a pro-hunting organization is voting against hunting. And that says anti-hunting to me.
There was a year straight where I was averaging up to 200 death threats a day.
I hugged it. Like, I just wanted to hug a bear.
It's proven that the average steak in a grocery store touches 50 to 100 hands and machines. And we're putting that into our body.
Hey, y'all. Cable Smith, host of the Lone Star Outdoors Show here.
This is Adam Weatherby.
I'm Corey Jacobson with Elk 101.
This is Christy Titus.
Hey, folks. This is John Bear.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
All right, y'all, so getting on to today's episode. This is like a special milestone we've got here. I've got my good friend Kara Schuett here with me, and this is it's not the first podcast I've done in person, but this is like the first, like, in studio podcast I've ever done, and will be the last one in this place with my upcoming move. But so you hold the rare distinction of being the only ever quote unquote in studio podcast.
Awesome.
But thank you so much for coming out and joining. I think we've been talking about this for, I think next month will be a year at this point.
Yep. I finally made it over. I'll be guiding over here for a really awesome foundation called Warriors in Quiet Waters. So I thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to come see you, check out the place before you move out.
Yeah, come check out my new place that I'm leaving. As I have like all the walls downstairs bare.
Yep. I can get the general idea.
Yeah, there you go. You know, it's the layout. It's all good. But so tell us a little bit about Warriors in Quiet Waters.
So Warriors in Quiet Waters is a wonderful foundation based here in Bozeman, Montana. They take post 9/11 combat veterans out fishing. And the point of the trip is not to just come out and catch fish. It's to teach veterans how to fish. So when they go back to wherever they're from, they can take these skills that they've learned here and apply them for stress relief. You know, if they're having a bad day, they can pick up the fly rod, they can go to the river. Just, you know, it's all based around them taking their skills when they go home with them.
And so these guys that apply for this, they come out for these trips. I mean, by the time they're leaving, they're fully outfitted. They can pack up their gear and they're set to hit pretty much any river or lakeside they need to.
Right. Yep. So they have their fly rod, they have flies, they have a pack, they have waders. We do some really detailed instruction. So they set up the fly rod the first day they get there. We do casting the first day they get there. Basically everything in between. They have a companion that stays with them their entire trip to make sure they're happy, they're comfortable, they're having a good time. But I think the biggest distinction with this program is that they also provide trips for the caregivers to the veterans. So a lot of times the caregivers are overlooked. I mean, you know, the vets, you know, obviously they've been through a lot, they deserve a lot, but these caregivers also need a break. They might also want to go fly fishing with the vet that they are taking care of. So it's awesome to see, you know, these guys come out. You know, the first day is a little awkward, a little weird. They're like, what is fly fishing? Where are we? But by the end of the week, everybody's happy, loving it, and ready to go home with their new skill.
So do these tend to be disabled vets, or is it a mix? What's the...
It's a mix. So, you know, we have amputees that come out, you know, guys who have lost their legs from combat. And then, you know, sometimes the wounds are on the inside. We can't really see them, but we definitely recognize all of it. And we welcome anybody who wants to come.
That's fantastic. And so far this year, have you actually gone out, or are you just up here getting ready to go out?
So this will be my fourth trip.
Okay.
Yep. I hope to do many, many more in the future. I was supposed to start in 2020, but COVID delayed a lot of things. So this is my first year doing the trips. It's the most amazing guide trips I've ever had. No offense to my clients if you're listening out there. But it's really special.
That's really exciting. So tell us a little bit just about some of the experiences you've had, and maybe if, you know, you don't have to say names or anything, but, you know, tell us about some of the people that you've had a chance to take out.
So, you know, I think social media is amazing. I love it. I use it to my benefit all the time. But one thing it has done in the fly fishing industry is the expectations are kind of out of control. So I'll take guys out and they're like, okay, I want to catch a 24-inch brown today. It's my first time fly fishing. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, we'll try. We'll do what we can. You know, that's kind of a tough thing to do.
And then there's me over here. I'm like, I caught a 6-inch cutty. Yeah!
So you're like the ideal client. Like, that's perfect.
I'm like, I am so happy if I get any, like, and it's actually to the point now where I'm like, it's almost more entertaining for me to catch the smallest, because I'm not going to catch Hog Johnson here. I'm not that guy. It's just not going to happen probably.
Right.
But if I can catch the smallest fish, oh, that's something. That's something.
Still a record. So this last weekend, I took out a guy from Texas, and I'll make sure he listens to this episode. And so it was his first time fly fishing. And he's like, you know, I really want to catch a 2-footer today. And I was like, oh yeah, we'll see what we can do. An hour into fishing the beaver head, he catches a 24-inch fish.
Of course he does.
So, you know, it was a big fight. You know, took at least 10 minutes to get it in the net, fighting it downriver. And we got it in the net, and both of us are shaking with adrenaline because, I mean, I saw the fish and I lost it. Anyway, so we got a bunch of pictures.
Wait, so here's the question. This is like a guide question, like how you work as a guide. So say you've got like a new angler or something like that, and you recognize, you're like, there is a freaking monster on the end of that line. Are you like, oh my gosh, you got a huge fish on there? Or are you like kind of playing it down, being like, okay, you know, just keep calm, keep your rod up?
Yes, like, I am definitely trying to keep calm while giving very clear and precise instructions, because it hurts me just as bad as it hurts the client when that fish, if the fish breaks off or gets off or whatever. It's very devastating for everybody. So I'm trying to keep calm, tell them what to do, talk them through it. There is an art to netting fish.
I am not an artist when it comes to that. I'm just throwing that out there.
I'll have to take you.
Definitely. I'm awkward when it comes to netting fish. I might look like I know what I'm doing sometimes when I fly fish, but definitely not when I'm netting. There's no question.
It's like a quick jab scoop.
Exactly. Me on the other hand, I'm like, hey. You guys can't see you can't see how I'm gesturing right now, but it's, trust me, it's awkward.
It's pretty awkward. So anyway, got the fish. I told him he's ruined on fly fishing forever.
pretty much.
So, you know, we caught a lot of fish that day. We had a great day, but nothing compared to that first fish.
See, that's the rough thing. That's like the guy that goes out hunting for the first time and just like happens across like a Boone and Crockett buck at like 20 yards and hammers it. And you're just like, you're never going to be satisfied with anything ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally get that. I shot a really big buck, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I just really haven't had the desire to shoot one since. I mean, unless it's bigger, then I'll shoot it. But yeah. I'm like, you know, now I'm kind of ruined on it.
Well, I mean, it doesn't hurt that you guys can supply the meat pretty consistently between you and Blade.
Yes, definitely.
So, you know, you're not sitting there concerned about like, oh, what are we going to do to fill the freezer this year? You know, walk out to the damn field and shoot one of those cows out there if we need to.
Exactly. Yes, we have lots of cows. But, you know, our deer that are on the ranch, they are delicious. They taste a lot like the cows because they're eating all the same stuff that the cows eat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a whitetail on our place.
When I say cows, I was talking about the cow elk that
showed
me.
Yeah, there's usually a few of those around.
Walk out on the back porch with your rifle.
I might. Things are getting weird out there. I don't know. Meat prices are crazy right now.
And that one cow was looking at me funny that week.
Mm-hmm.
Just eyeballing me. Now I remember. So, you know, a little bit of how we met. You know, I was came up after hunting season last year and was visiting some friends, and we all ended up in. I ended up meeting your husband Blade, and we ended up sitting in a duck blind together, and then 3 days later I'm moving to Montana. I mean, we'd always joke, my family would always joke with me, they're like, you know, because my trips to Montana just kept getting longer and longer and longer every time I'd visit, like quote-unquote visit, and suddenly I'm like month-long trips. Now my family used to always joke, they're like, one of these days we're just gonna get a call that says, hey, I'm staying, send me the dogs. And that's basically how it kind of happened. I mean, I went home and got him, but I called him up and was like, hey, guess what? Sorry, I've got a beer here, and I'm trying not to burp right into the microphone. But so, you know, we got to meet. We did, I did some waterfowling and some pheasant hunting with Blade and Josh and the whole crew. And met you through your husband.
Yep.
And we started talking a little bit about fly fishing because I just picked it up. I just finally started seeing some success in fly fishing. And we sat down, like, we need to record a podcast. And that was just after, you know, Blade had kind of taken me around the property, and he's like, you want to see some cool shit?
Yep.
And he's like, just put your binoculars up over there. I'm like, holy crap! There's elk everywhere.
Everywhere.
No, that was really cool to see. Then he showed me some barbecued bald eagles. We did not touch them. We did not commit any felonies. I'm just throwing that out there.
The game warden came out. He did the investigation.
Actually, what he told me is like, hey, you want to go commit a felony? We were joking. Joking. Please, nobody send emails. He was joking. He's like, go pick that up. I'm like, I'm not touching shit.
Yeah.
That's a whole different weird story. Like, that's a wild thing. Like, you cannot even touch them. You can't
pick up their feathers.
Yeah, unless the only one that's like authorized to have a feather is like if you're gifted by a native chieftain or something, right?
I didn't know that.
That's from how I understand it, and I'll probably get emails, was like, I guess you can own, the only way you can own a feather is if you're gifted by a native chieftain. And there's like all kinds of paperwork, and they have to have gotten it. And so you can't just be like, oh yeah, I was gifted by, you know, chief whatever. Like, there's all this paperwork and stuff like that.
Right.
Because, that was one of the other wild things. We were looking at elk, and they were like, and there's a dead bald eagle. Holy crap.
Yeah, I hate to say that it happens probably quite a bit.
Well, he was telling me, he's like, yeah, it happens so many times. After it's reported this many times, then, like, the power company has to come out and, like, do something to the power lines in that area.
Yep.
Then it happens somewhere else, and they have to come out and... That's wild, but
ranch life.
Ranch life.
Yep.
But oh yeah, so we were talking about expectations and stuff. You know, it's funny. Like you go out and you want to shoot the biggest thing, but you're sitting here. You see the deer I shot.
Is that a deer?
Everyone, it's most of a deer. It's very small.
Okay.
But that is the first deer I shot. That is an Arizona mule deer. That was the first tag I ever filled. And anybody that's been following along, been listening for the past few years knows the whole story. But I tell you what, my expectations were set low, not in a bad way.
Right.
I'm not saying it's a bad, because like now I'm happy. I'm like, shoot, I shoot a forky and I'm like stepping it up. Like, I'm stoked.
You shot something when I first met you, and it was rolling around in the back of your truck forever.
That would be my my Axis Sitka-looking elk here.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, that was the very stinky head that was rolling around in the back of my truck. Because
yeah,
I was just supposed to come up and visit Montana. I wasn't supposed to come up and be here for like a month and a half before, you know, like, so I had I just shot my elk in Arizona. I didn't have time to get the head taken care of. And so I was like, okay, I'll just, you know, figure it out when I get a little settled, get it, drop it off somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, this trip took a lot longer than I expected, yep. And that head started stinking in the back of my truck.
Well, it looks great now. It looks better on the wall mounted. Bleached than it did in the back of your truck.
Yeah, definitely.
And smells better.
Definitely smells a lot better. That was getting pretty rough for a while. And then when I moved into this place, I left it in the garage. Because I called the landlord. I'm like, hey, I know my lease doesn't start for another 2 weeks, but can I just drop off the stuff that's in my truck right now? And I put that head in there, and it was rank.
I bet.
And I mean, that thing was wrapped. Like, I had it literally encased in salt.
I remember that.
Yeah. And wrapped in so many layers of saran wrap, yep. And trash bags. And it's still, I mean, probably a little TMI. There was like maggots crawling out of the back of my truck.
Oh, no.
It was so disgusting. It was so bad.
That is bad. Well, it looks good now.
Yeah, now it's very pretty. Yeah. My elk got the arrow there. Mm-hmm. So we're happy. And again, low expectations. I shot myself a little raghorn.
Yeah.
As long as I do, albeit this year, so... Here's my thing. This year, I've gotten so used to having meat in the freezer for the first time, like consistently.
Right.
That I'm kind of of the opinion this year, like, I know I don't have as much time to hunt. I don't have as much opportunity because I'm moving. I'm like full on, if it's brown, it's down this year. Like,
absolutely.
The first legal cow, whatever I see, it is, I'm punching that sucker with my rifle and I'm calling it a day.
And I think cows are better to eat.
Mm-hmm.
In my personal opinion. I think does are better to eat.
Oh, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to argue with you with that. Because it's like, my whole thing is like, I like the experience. I like to go chase them. Mm-hmm. The problem is this year, you know, we've had some discussions, a bunch of upheaval with jobs and business and all this stuff. I'm dealing with all that. And then I'm dealing with health issues. And then now I'm in the middle of a move because, you know, I'm really smart in deciding to move in the middle of hunting season, you know, in the middle of fall in Montana, where it's probably the second I start moving, it's going to be like, yeah, we're going to dump snow.
Yep. We need it, though.
Oh, desperately need that water. But I'm kind of like, I don't have time to spend 6 weeks out hunting, you know, like investing four or five days out of the week to being in the woods, to being out hunting. So I'm like, you know what? I'm shooting the first damn legal thing I can see. I'm filling that freezer, saving the adventure for another year.
Yep.
But, and here's the other thing. I still got bear. I can still go predator hunt. I can, you know, I mean, and we've got shoulder seasons out here until like February.
Right.
And then I can, you know, and then there's waterfowl till, when does waterfowl end?
Duck gumbo is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when does waterfowl season end here? It's like sometime in the spring, isn't it? Almost?
Let me Google it.
I'd have to, it's not a big deal. Not a big deal. Wait, I'm looking it up. That's but like, really it's, question. I mean, it's Montana. Mm-hmm. There's maybe like 3 days out of the year where we're not
like there's something going on.
Like, yeah. And like, that's something that's not there's like, yeah, like a handful of weeks out of the year that there's something that's not just like a year-round hunt, like coyotes or whatever. There, I mean, there's so much opportunity. We have such long seasons here.
Yep.
And, oh, man, it's so nice being a resident now.
Oh, I bet.
Compared to those non-resident tags.
If you can even get a tag. I mean, the lottery system is so, it's great, but there's so many people putting in, it's really hard to draw a tag.
Okay, so here's a question for you, because, you know, you guys started Montana Bucks and Ducks.
Yep.
You guys do outfitting.
Yes.
And there's recently been a lot of controversy around the different outfitter tag bills that have come up. And just, you know, honest opinion, I'd be curious for your views on how that came up and the tags that are available, because you're a long-term Montana resident,
right?
But you're also an outfitter. So, you know, you kind of get both sides of it. And, you know, I'd be curious.
Yeah, no, I would love to talk about it. I think it's a lot of misinformation out there. I think people think that if outfitters get tags, that's going to take away from what they have on their public land. But for us, for example, we hunt on our ranch. It's not open to the public. It's too much of a liability. So when our clients get these tags, they are bringing money into the community via the gas station, via the restaurants, and then just buying the tag alone. They're expensive. They are not cheap. Our Fish, Wildlife, and Park Services, they need this money. They need the revenue to make more public access, to make the public accesses that we have better, to make better habitat. So I, even if I wasn't an outfitter, I only see the benefits to allotting outfitter tags. Here's the other problem. All the other Western states around us, the outfitters get tags. So if you're somebody from Texas and you want to go hunting in the West, you're going to go to Idaho where you can get a hold of an outfitter and that outfitter says, yep, I've got my tag right here. It's waiting for you. It's got your name on it. You don't have to wait and see if you get it, not get it. You don't have to deal with the lottery. I've got it right here. Let's plan your trip.
This is as opposed to states where you have to first draw your tag and then apply to the outfitter. And then, you know, is the outfitter going to have time on their schedule or room for that then for you versus you go with the outfitter, you're guaranteed that specific tag.
Yeah.
And typically it's for their privately leased land that they guide on.
Yep. And even the public land outfitters in Idaho anyway, they're not going to give out 100 tags to the outfitter. They do studies. How many animals can we shoot to keep this sustainable? So that's how many tags the outfitter gets. But in Montana, it's a total crapshoot. So when we first started outfitting, there weren't a lot of people putting in for tags. So they never ran out in the state of Montana. But now we're seeing this crazy influx of people wanting to come hunting out here. So now it's becoming an issue where it was not an issue before. So, I mean, a lot of our clients, they don't draw their tags. So 2 years ago, we only had two people. That's it. Deer tags. That was it. Oh, and that's devastating to an outfitting business. And operating on this lottery system where you don't know if you're going to be able to operate that year is insane. And the fact that we're expected to do it that way is also insane.
Yeah, it's a tough thing because the part of me that's like everyone should be on a level playing field and this and that says one thing, but I do definitely understand where you're coming from, and especially, you know, bringing in those funds, being able to run a business, and being able to consistently have clients is huge. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's tough. There's not a great answer. There's not a great solution for any of it, you know, unless somebody can magically bring back populations of elk and mule deer to what they, you know, were before,
right.
back in the early 1800s.
Yep.
Like it's a you know, it's a difficult thing with a difficult solution. You know, you've got here in Montana, you've got a lot of people that are like you that are residents but are also guides and yep. look at both sides and so what I forget what ended up happening with those bills, where we're at.
So we got some legislation passed where if you are going to hunt with an outfitter this year, you get an emergency. It's like an emergency outfitter assistance. So you do get a tag. We have to fill out a bunch of extra paperwork. The out-of-state client that's coming up, I think he has to pay $100 extra more revenue for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Going forward, I think it's kind of up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand it was popular opinion that, and we voted it to get rid of outfitter tags. But things are changing. Like I said, when this first happened, it wasn't a big deal because whoever applied from out of state got a tag. We weren't overtapped. Now there's so many people, we have to revisit the situation.
Yeah. It's difficult. It's past, you know, I want to say 3 years, it's really has been getting difficult to get those tags out. It used to be, you know, you could go to the store, you know, a month or two into the season and go pick up, you know, an over-the-counter tag, no problem. As a non-resident, used to be, I mean, you were pretty much guaranteed at least a general tag, a license, you know.
Right.
And Montana's a little bit different, and, you know, most states are either like bonus points or preference points, right. And they do this. And Montana's kind of like, my dogs are like so antsy right now, and they are helping with the podcast. They're both jumping up, trying to be very social. You guys aren't podcast guests. I'm sorry. You're very cute, but you're not. But you know, Montana's a little bit different. We've got licenses, which pretty much lets you hunt. You know, it depends on which license. You get the sportsman's license, you get this, that, the other, whatever.
Right.
But that pretty much lets you hunt across a good chunk of the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then the draws, now for non-residents, it's a draw because of the demand.
Yep.
We're still guaranteed licenses, pretty much.
Yeah, if you're a resident, yeah.
Like, that is... Not encouraging anyone to move here because we're full.
Yeah.
I'm the last one. I took up the last spot. So, you know, I tell you what, it's expensive to hunt here in Montana, but we do reap the benefits of it as residents.
Yeah. I mean, it's huge for these small towns. You know, I'm from a small town in Dillon, and hunting mm-hmm. is a huge economic factor. I mean, I think fishing is a little bit more so because the season is longer, but both keep these, you know, little towns alive.
We definitely reap the benefits out here of those non-residents hunting. And that's one of the things I laugh because there's a balance. There's so many people here that are, you know, and it's a lot of the old guard that, you know, go down with the ship. They're like, oh, you know, effing out-of-staters coming out here. I just wish we could get rid of all of them. I'm like, okay, you got rid of all of those out-of-staters who are dropping $1,200+ solely on a tag, on a elk and mule deer tag, general tag.
Yep.
Extra if they're getting a permit, if they're getting a bear tag, if they're getting this, if they're going to go fishing with it. Like,
yep.
Suddenly, you know, by the all said and done with travel expenses and food and this and that, they've dropped $5,000 into the... you know, per person into Montana's economy and these small town economies.
Stuck in the cord.
My dogs are like unplugging all the stuff for my computer right now. And it's amazing.
I think they unplugged your Alexa.
Oh no, she's still talking.
Oh good.
There we go. She's upside down. She's got her face in the dirt. Like, I'm like, okay, so you take that away. Suddenly your grocery prices are going to start going up.
Yep.
Suddenly your gas prices are going to start going up. Guess what else is going to go up? Your tag prices are going to double, triple, quadruple. When you don't have somebody paying $1,200 for those tags,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I can't even tell you. I think I just, you know, you just bulk buy when you live here, you just bulk buy, like you go down the list and check, 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 check,
yep.
Purchase, you drop your like $250 that it costs and call it a day. You know, that's not going to be as cheap or as comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people are just never going to be happy.
I agree. Yeah, I've been paying pretty close attention. I've listened to both sides. And I do understand. I really do. But it's something that has to be addressed. And it's being addressed now.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And it's, again, it's a balance. It's like, as long as everyone's a little bit unhappy, we're in a good mm-hmm. spot, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want anyone a lot unhappy.
No.
But you're never going to make it. Yeah, you're never going to get people like, Because what people here want is, I want to pay $60 for all my tags and never see anyone in the woods when I go out.
Yeah, that's not... Those days are over.
Guess what? You're going to need a time machine for that shit.
Yes.
It's just not going to happen.
And I think COVID has changed a lot of that.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the surge we've seen, and I've talked about this once or twice, like, it's a big question. It's like, over the next year, we've seen these surges over the past kind of 2-3 years. Is it going to continue, or are we going to see all these people drop off and kind of lose interest? Are we going to see people that are buying tags and just not going out into the woods? That it's hard to predict what's going to happen with this. And who knows what's going to happen with the government? Like, are lockdowns going to continue? If so, yeah, we'll probably see more people in the woods again.
Yep.
And more dumb people that probably shouldn't be carrying rifles. Like, I mean, I am all about, I'm all about new hunters.
Right.
I love that. But I'm also all about not shooting people.
Happens every year.
Every
single year. Be careful, people. Wear your orange.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, I'm a consummate archery hunter. That's what I love. That's what I'm passionate about.
Yep.
And so, you know, I don't wear my orange when it's archery season, but damn, the second that thing shifts,
yep,
I am head to toe pumpkin.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I'm carrying around an orange flag waving behind me that says, don't shoot me.
Yes.
Because there is a lot of inexperienced people, and I'm a firm believer that you should find a way to get out. Don't like pressure yourself into having to become perfect and learn everything. Get out in the woods. But a few things you do need to learn are how not to shoot people and commit felonies.
And also, when you're fishing, please, please give people space.
Oh, dear Lord, yes.
That's been a huge thing this year. I'll just be standing somewhere and somebody, I'll look over and someone's right next to me. I'm like, how'd you get here?
So, like, that's, you know, that's one thing. Gosh, I love being out here. My fly fishing equipment never leaves my truck. My whole backseat of my truck, I've got both fly rods, my wading belt, my sling pack, my waders, my boots, a couple of changes of clothes.
Nice.
It all exists back there.
Good.
Because that's one of the amazing things about Montana. You can't drive anywhere, without, oh, look, fishing access point.
Yep.
I got an extra 2 hours. Like, let me go over. And it may be garbage fishing.
It's still fun.
I mean, there's no bad time to cast a line in the water.
No, I agree with that. Although this year, with all the closures, it was kind of tough, the fishing closures. Yeah. The Big Hole's still basically pretty much all shut down to fishing, which is my personal favorite river in Montana. It's hard to see it go through this drought. I hope that the new regulations they put in will help our brown trout populations. Catch and release only. Mm-hmm. They're going to close a lot of the river to fishing starting November 1st. So if you are going to fish the Big Hole this year, there's some new regs, new regulations that just went into effect mid-August. So just be aware of that. You know, if you like going down there and fishing worms, that's awesome. But some sections are closed to live bait. So they're just trying to bring those brown trout populations back, trying to make sure that they survive this drought. And hopefully next year is a different story. We have lots of water. It doesn't get as hot and everything goes back to normal.
Well, you know, and here's knock on wood. Like, I'm big farmer's almanac person. Like, the world goes through phases, all of that stuff. And I get messages from my mom all the time. She's like, guess what? Guess what about this year, about the weather, this and that. She's like, I've been reading Farmer's Almanac. And she was telling me apparently this year we're supposed to have a pretty solid winter.
Good.
And which I am the biggest hypocrite on earth. I am like the most go back to California person.
Oh my God.
Okay. I mean, you know, Facebook. Like, yeah. Facebook is what it is. I follow Greg Gianforte on on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Follow the governor on Facebook. And you know how Facebook is. He'll post something about, like, look, I'm here to, you know, I'm just here showing some love to our first responders, our firemen, you know, just wanted to recognize the work they do. Just a nice, like, it's a PR picture. We all know what it is.
Right.
Dear Lord. There'll be like three people, like, yeah, I love our governor. And then, like, everyone else is like, oh, but you let 9 people die of COVID, and why do you hate the elderly, and oh, you're a piece of garbage, and this and that. And I, oh my gosh, I normally ignore it. I just ignore that stuff. I was out. I was waiting for someone, and I was just in a mood. It's I full on told someone to go back to California.
Okay, I've got a story for you.
Okay,
my dad is from California, so I feel like I can, like, say some things. Like, you know, it's not as bad. But so I hiked up to a high mountain lake in the Pioneer Mountain Range 2 days ago, and I saw something at the end of the lake. We thought it was a moose because there's a lot of moose up there. So we're looking at it, and it's pretty far away. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, that's definitely not a moose. And then it starts running, and it's a bear. And so it was, A, the biggest black bear I have ever seen in my entire life, or B, a grizzly bear.
Okay.
My worst nightmares. Like, so, you know, we're, like, super vigilant. We're, you know, we have our pistols ready, like, still fishing, but just very vigilant. I have my dog with me.
You're significantly more aware than you were about 5 minutes prior.
Exactly. So this younger couple comes by us, and we're like, hey, be careful walking that way. We think we just saw a bear. And there are a lot of grizzly bears in that area, mm-hmm. that have moved in. So, you know, just be careful walking over there. And the couple says, oh, yeah, we saw it. We're going over there to check it out.
Oh, my gosh.
And I looked at him. I said, so what part of California are you from?
I mean, and don't get me wrong, like, I love bears. I love watching bears, and, like, I want to get that vantage, but that is, like,
that's dumb.
We're going over there. Oh, my gosh.
And like I said, it could have been a grizzly bear, which I do not mess around with grizzly bears. Black bears, whatever, you know, they're pretty harmless most of the time. Grizzly bears, that's a whole other thing.
I just recorded a podcast. I think it'll come out, it'll probably come out a week or two prior to this one. With Tana Grenda, my dog sitting there hacking up something on my floor, I'm pretty sure.
Oh no, he's joking.
Lord. That's what she gets for, like, licking things off the floor. She was eating random things found under my desk, probably.
I'm gonna have to give her the Heimlich.
Probably 800-year-old Cheez-Its or something. anyway. So I was doing this interview with Tana Grenda. And she lives up in Alaska with her husband, and she and her brother, not that long ago, I think it was spring season, went out for a grizzly hunt, and it was the two of them, and literally came a hair's breadth away from being mauled to death by a grizzly. Like,
it'd be a bad way to go.
It was just, you know, anybody that's been listening has listened to the story. If you haven't, go back and listen to it. But it's just, I mean, put 3 rifle rounds into the dang thing, then the rifle jams. They proceed to put like 4 more pistol rounds in it before it decides it's wounded enough to like saunter off and die in peace. Like, it was, you know, they had it like lumbering after them. They were like hidden behind like a little. I felt tired after listening to this story. It was so intense. Like, I needed to take like a nap.
Oh my gosh, I have to listen to it.
So you don't fuck with grizzly or brown bears?
No.
Just don't do it.
Don't do it.
And, well, and that's the thing. And the brown bears up in Alaska are not normally aggressive.
Okay.
They're not normally like the type that are going to come after you because they don't encounter people as much. They, you know, they're not used to people as much as, say, like the grizzlies out here are. And the grizzlies, I mean, our population of hunters is a lot bigger than it is up in Alaska. Like, just the density of people that are out hunting is a lot bigger. And so they're a lot more used to, like, when hunters are out, there's going to be food around. And you just, like, I don't sit, like, a lot of people, you know, the first question a lot of people ask whenever I talk about hunting or being out in the woods, are like, well, aren't you afraid of bears? And I'm like, yes and no. I'm like, no, not really. Like, I don't go out and worry about bears, but I'm always very cognizant of them.
Grizzly bears freak me out a little bit.
But grizzlies, yeah, are kind of...
Again, they are a whole different... We can hunt black bears. They have a healthy fear of people. Grizzly bears have no fear of people because they don't have to. So that's another thing. I think we should have a grizzly bear season. I'm probably going to get death threats in my DMs for saying that. But it's true. It needs to happen. There's too many. They're overpopulated. They're doing fantastic.
Oh, they're way beyond repopulation goals. And I forget. I know Wyoming did their... They started grizzly hunt. I can't remember if that got canceled or not.
I don't think they were able to go through with that.
I can't quite remember
that. Some judge that blocked it. I want to say the judge was from Missoula.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Dear Lord. Missoula and Gallatin, the last two counties to remove mask mandates. And albeit, here's my thing with the mask. I'm going way off on the tangent here. With the mask mandates, like, Gallatin was... Even Missoula lifted them before Gallatin did, I'm pretty
sure. Really?
Yeah.
That's
Gallatin was the last county, and they were holding on. And I'm almost glad, because it was so great to see everyone just saying F it and giving the middle finger to the mandates and just stopping wearing them. I went into the Belgrade DMV and I was like, and I kind of walked in. I was like, do I need to put this on? I'm like, oh, don't bother. None of them had, I hope I don't get anyone fired.
Yeah.
It was just, it was so great. And I was like, it was great to see people standing up to this bullshit.
Right.
And I'm just like, anyway, that's a whole different tangent that
I could talk about. Oh, COVID all day,
man. We definitely I feel like if we go too much deeper, that's going to be the rest of this podcast.
Right,
but
right.
So tell us a little bit about we've talked a little bit about fly fishing.
Yep.
Do you guys do fly fishing guiding through Montana Bucks and Ducks too?
Negative. So I don't know how detailed I want to go into this. It's very complicated. Board of Outfitters regulates guides and outfitters very heavily. So I am a guide. I'm an independent contractor. I can guide for outfitters, but I cannot book my own trips because I am not an outfitter.
Okay.
So lucky for me, I work with a ton of fantastic outfitters out of Dillon, Montana, Twin Bridges, Montana. So if I have somebody who wants to hunt with me, we book through my outfitter. I take you out fishing, we have a great time. But it's very... So Montana Bucks and Ducks is just hunting for now. That could totally change in the future. But
and so I actually I reached out to you the other day, and hopefully sending a guy your way. I'm hoping he reaches out to awesome. Blade to go do a pheasant hunt.
Yep.
So what do you guys guide through Montana Bucks and Ducks?
So Montana Bucks and Ducks is basically everything. Antelope, elk, white-tailed deer, that's kind of our main thing because we have such a great, healthy population. Yeah. We manage it. They're beautiful. They're awesome. And then we also do pheasants and ducks. So, you know, the duck season is nice in pheasant season because it lasts so much longer. Mm-hmm. You know, rifle season is about a month long here. So, you know, it's like cramming a lot of people in pretty quick, trying to get animals. We're usually pretty successful, knock on wood. I don't want to. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. We've done a lot of TV shows for the Outdoor Channel. We get to take out a lot of famous people, which is cool. And that's just all from great management on our end. We shoot the right bucks. We have mm-hmm. great bucks. We have a lot of feed for them. They're all doing well. The mule deer in our area have been suffering a little bit. We don't shoot as many mule deer as we used to, but the whitetail have kind of taken over.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's... The muleys just, I don't think, are doing that great.
They're not very smart. They're my personal favorite. I love them to death. If I had the choice between a mule deer hunt and a whitetail hunt, I would pick mule deer all day long. But they're not that smart.
Oh, they're dumb. As far as deer go, they're dumb as a sack of hammers. I mean, like...
Right.
I think anyone who's hunting for a while knows the whole, like... You spook a mule deer, you just wait 5 seconds till it like decides to stop and look back at you and figure out what it is.
Exactly.
And you can shoot it.
Yep.
Like,
yes.
Versus a whitetail, like you spook that thing, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like you're never seeing that sucker again.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, luckily for us, we've got a pretty big ranch. We've got a lot of acreage, but they they're kind of there. They're residents. They stay there. So we'll try our hardest to find them again. You know, if there's one you really like, you see them. This sounds like High Fence, but it's not High Fence, I promise.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're just, they're animals and they're going to hang out where the,
right.
the feed is available. Like,
yep.
And you're not driving four-wheelers like through the middle of them.
Oh,
either.
No. And so we do a lot of work with Montana Wounded Warriors, getting people out hunting. And then we also work with a few different foundations. So one in particular is the Outdoor Adventure Foundation, and they will take, they basically sponsor a kid to go hunting who has like a terminal illness, not necessarily cancer, but.
Okay.
And maybe it's not terminal. But kids who have gone through a lot. So, you know, there's one kid, he was 12, and we took him out on a hay wagon to shoot his first, last, and only elk. He shot his elk, and then he passed away a couple months later. Mm. So, you know, we try to give back to the hunting community any way we can. If we can make it easier for these people to go out and harvest an animal, we will do anything to make it possible for them, which is, you know, one of the benefits that we have, and we love doing it.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, that's so important. It's because you look at a lot of these programs too for kids that are, you know, that are supposed to help terminal kids, and that's the one thing they won't do, that they refuse to do, is hunts. Like the
right.
Make-A-Wish will not do anything to do with hunting. They refuse. Which is, it just seems like that just irritates the shit out of me, because it seems like so politically driven, kind of like, it's like if you were really about making the kids happy, you would have no issue with going out and doing this. But it's yep. like that, again, I could go on a whole diatribe
oh, yeah.
about that with no problem.
Yep.
But programs like that are so awesome. And there's that one. There's one. And I'm blanking on the name of it. There's another one I did. I did an episode with Donnie Drake back in the day. And it was a very similar style program where they take kids out for a hunt for, you know, for their wish. And it's going to bug the crap out of me that I can't remember the name of the program either. And I think they just changed their name too. And that's why I'm a little out of it. But no, programs like that are amazing. If folks want to find Montana Bucks and Ducks, and they and I will it wasn't officially Montana Bucks and Ducks at the time. That was, I think you guys started that up just after I hunted with Blade.
So what happened was our outfitter, my mentor, his name's Bill Kemp, got me started guiding, got Blade into hunting guiding. He let us operate underneath his license, basically. Well, he's ready to retire. So he came to us and said, hey, buy this business from me. You guys are set up to make it super successful. So we bought it just this last spring. And so we've taken over. So far, so good. It's still pretty early in the season.
Well, all I got to say is, you know, with Blade there, I got my first. I still haven't gotten a duck. There was nothing but Canadas when we were.
Oh, really? Well, that'll happen.
There was a lot of them.
Right.
There was a lot of them. I got a limit of Canadas. You know, I limited my pheasants when I went out. And so I will highly recommend.
Oh, good.
Y'all book with with Blade and Kara. I'm
yes.
just saying. So if folks want to find Montana Bucks and Ducks, where are they headed?
So I love our website. We just totally redid it. It's MT. Hold on. Let me.
I just looked it up. I feel like I should know it, but
MT. Okay. MTBucksandDucks.com.
And it's AND. It's fully spelled out.
Yes.
Bucks and
but
Ducks.
But yeah, MTBucksandDucks.com.
There you go. So make sure y'all check out Montana Bucks and Ducks if you want to come out and. And again, that's the cool thing about Montana. You can come out for a deer hunt, and then you can, if you tag out, you can spend the rest of your time waterfowling
yep.
or upland game hunting or
fishing.
You yeah. can call you can go find somewhere and throw out a fox bow and call some predators if you want. Like,
yep.
there's so many opportunities in this state. And it's just, it's the best place on earth. I will fight anyone that says different.
I agree.
I've had some people that are like, well, have you ever been? I'm like, it does not matter. I'm like, I've traveled a lot of places in this world.
Right.
Montana is the best place on earth.
But if I had to move from Montana, kicked out, couldn't stay here anymore, okay. Wyoming.
Really?
Yeah.
Wyoming. I would choose Alaska. I would do Alaska.
It's a little remote. I mean, it's fine.
Well, I also don't like people.
Again,
we've discussed where I'm moving, right?
Havre, Montana is the perfect place for you.
Yeah, and I'm not even moving to Havre. I'm moving to like 40 miles north of Havre. I'm closer to more Canadians than I am.
Any Canadian girls up there?
Trying to set me up on my own podcast.
Yes.
What is this?
Yes.
What is this? So Montana Bucks and Ducks isn't the only thing you've got going on.
No, I definitely not. So anything outdoors, fishing or hunting specifically, I'm super passionate about. So one thing that I started the spring of 2019 is called Yellow Sally. It's fly fishing clothing for women specifically and girls, which was kind of an afterthought. But once I started, you know, thinking like, wow, there are no companies out there who make fishing clothing for girls. It kind of took off. You know, Instagram, I love social media. I use it for good and not evil. I absolutely love it. So, you know, I connected with girls all over the country, all over the world, who are like, wow, we are being recognized in this industry where previously they have not. So I'm sizing for all. That was another thing I wanted to do, whether it's an extra small or a 3X. I typically have your size. If not, message me. I'll make it happen. But Yellow Sally, it's been amazing. I've made a lot of connections. I love wearing the clothing. And like my thought going into it was, well, you know, maybe it won't work out, but at least I'll have my own cute clothing to wear.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I love the companies that are out there. They've been super supportive of me, but they release one or two fishing shirts a year, and all of us girls are wearing the exact same shirt. And I'm like, that's not me. Like, I'm, you know, that's just not me. So, you know, my patterns are bright. They're crazy. They're different, which is the whole point. Also, you know, inspiring more women to get into the sport, which in 2020 has totally exploded. Women are interested. They're taking classes. They're coming fishing with me. They're, you know, buying stuff from the store, which is awesome. I really appreciate it. But it's totally taken off, and I'm super grateful for it.
Well, and I love the stuff you put out, and I think you have like some men's board shorts or something. That's about it.
Okay. I felt a little bit guilty that I didn't have anything for my husband. So I made men's swimming breeches, as I call them, but swim trunks.
I was going to say they're not like the full length board shorts or anything.
No.
They're them swimming breeches.
Swimming breeches. Brown trout pattern. Those have been a pretty big seller, but I think women see them and they're like, oh my gosh, my husband who fishes has everything. He's got all the nice stuff. I'm going to get him a pair of brown trout swimming shorts.
It's one of those things. It's like, I'm a fan of cutties. I'm not a fan of brown trout. Like, cutthroat. I don't know what it is about cutthroats. I think it's when I first heard the story of cutthroats. And then also when I learned why they're called cutthroats, I always had... Like, do you ever hear a name for, like, the kind of colloquial name for an animal, and you're like, you kind of come up with a reason in your head why it's named that? And that, for cutthroats, for me, I thought it was, like, because it was, like, this aggressive form of trout. I'm like,
aggressive.
I mean, like, they are. But no, they've got, like, red slits on their throat. Like,
right.
And I was like, that, like, blew my mind or something when I first heard that.
You know what would really blow your mind?
What's that?
Have you caught a cut bow?
I do not believe so.
I do not believe
I've caught a cut bow.
So beautiful, like a rainbow, and then just those red slits underneath.
See, though, like, I feel like a lot of the West Slope cutties I've caught up here have had some just beautiful colors on them. Because there's been a couple of times I've caught, I was like, is that a rainbow? And then so maybe I have caught a couple of cut bows.
Right.
But I know, I'm pretty sure most of the... Most of what I've caught up here has been up in the tobacco roots. Mm. Well, remember we were talking. I'd message him. I'm like, I need a place to just get. I'm having a bad time right now. I need to get to the water somewhere. Where can I just disappear for a couple of days? And I was researching some places. I ended up in the tobacco roots, and probably shouldn't say this, but I was up at the Sure Shot Lakes, and because right now. Right now, it's kind of my place. Not too many people go up there, at least okay. to where I go. The Sure Shot Lakes up in Tobacco Roots, about an hour and a half to get there from Bozeman. And you can just drive right up to the lakes. And you can park there and set up camp. And you're not going to be pulling them out every 5 minutes. And they're not going to be big. But I caught probably the last weekend I was there, I probably caught like 6 to 10. I mean, anywhere from 6 inch to 10 inch cutties, and they were just big enough to recognize they were fish on either side of my hand.
Yeah.
That's about it.
It's still fun though.
Oh yeah.
So I heard this quote, and I try to, it's hard when you're guiding, but I try to live by this. But the best fly fisherman is the one who has the most fun.
Oh, I guarantee that's me every single time. I'm also the guy, and I talked to somebody about this. Like, I'm not the stoic fly fisherman.
Yeah,
I'm the guy. Like, I get one on the hook. I'm like, yeah, baby, let's get her in. Like, I'm yelling at my buddies. I'm like,
screaming,
I got one. I'm like the guy that if there's other people on the river, they're like, ah. Like, that guy just needs to tone it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, what? I've got like a 4-inch fish on my hook, and I'm like, yeah, motherfuckers, what's up?
Well, I think people probably look at you weird when you drop the F-bomb, and their kids are there.
Yeah, well. Suck it, bitches!
Right.
There's a 10-year-old kid on that boat.
Yep. I take out some kids on the river. I'll be just putting my hands over their ears.
Earmuffs.
Earmuffs.
Oh, dear Lord, Sam's on that boat. And yep. he's got a fish on the line. Gosh. Earmuffs.
Do you ever watch the Hank Patterson videos on YouTube?
I don't think I have.
You need to watch some Hank Patterson videos tonight when I leave.
Okay.
Really funny.
I will make sure to link to some of those on the show notes page.
So
as well.
When he catches a fish, he'll yell something like hot dog or backpack or like, you know, so something specific to him. So everybody on the river knows that it's him that caught the fish.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a spook, but it's hilarious. You got to watch it. Yeah.
The names, I feel like somebody's told me about him before. Like some of my fly fishing friends have told me about it before. The name sounds really familiar.
You will laugh very hard.
But I have do you know, he goes by Huge Fly Fisherman.
I have a sticker.
Yep. So I met him in Colorado. So when I was coming up, just before coming to see you guys.
Okay.
I was fishing with a friend in Colorado, and I had somebody else that I'd recorded a podcast with say, hey, you have to talk to this guy. And I saw he was in Colorado. I'm like, hey, you want to grab a beer? So we meet up, and we just connected. And he's like, hey, can you be in northern Utah in 2 days? I'm like, yeah. He's like, all right, you're coming on a float trip with me.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'm like, sweet. And so you want to talk about like weird dudes on the river. Like, you've probably seen his videos. Like,
yep.
Oh my God. Like, I will say that is the first time I've ever added a bare ass to my podcast covers. He holds the distinction of being the one and only bare ass on a podcast cover that I've ever promoted. So
that's awesome.
There's that.
Yeah, I have his sticker on my cooler, and some of my clients that see it, they get it. They're like, "That's funny. I'm a huge fly fisherman. That's hilarious." And some of them are like, "So you think you're like a huge fly fisherman or what?" I'm like, it's facetious. Like, it's supposed to be funny.
I bet you're a lot of fun at parties, aren't you?
Right.
You know, it's just with some things, some people sometimes forget hunting and fishing is supposed to be fun.
Yes.
And don't get me, like, there's a serious aspect to it, like, especially with hunting, and like, you want to have respect for the animals and the game, and there's an art to it and a talent with fly fishing and this. And then there's so much to it. But why the hell are you out there if you're not having fun?
I don't know.
And I mean, I've caught myself. There's days where like I'll go out and I get focused on the wrong things, like especially with fly fishing. Right. Like I get focused on the wrong stuff and I stop having fun. And I sit there and I like try and force it. And it like puts me in a bad mood. And I'm like, that is the last thing I want to do with fly fishing.
Yep. Beer helps with that, by the way.
This is true. See, though, like I'll do beer when it gets a little bit colder. But like, I'll admit, when I'm in like a nice little high upland stream, you know, it's sunny, it's warm, I'm fly fishing, I drink a lot of White Claws when I'm fly fishing.
Yeah, White Claws are delicious.
Oh, it's just so perfect. Like when it's warm and it's refreshing and you got a nice little buzz going.
Yep.
And I'm probably going to get more emails about this than we did about the other controversial stuff we talked about.
I feel like we've covered a lot of controversial stuff today.
We have White Claws and Alpha Kegs, COVID.
I don't know. I feel like we can all agree, even if you don't admit it to yourself, White Claws are delicious.
They are refreshing.
Yes.
And delicious.
They're low calories.
Low calories and
low carb.
They've got
keto.
Higher alcohol content than a Coors Light.
It's true. Speaking of which, I think we're running low on beer.
I was going to say, do we need to pause this for a second and refresh?
Pause it.
All right, let's pause. This is a great place for an advertisement. You know, we just got back. We got another beer running. We're on a completely different topic now. We're talking hunting dogs because I'm moving up to BFE or BFN, depending on where you're from. BFE or BFN, Montana, up 10 minutes from the Canadian border in the middle of a bunch of wheat fields, but has lots of great upland game hunting, lots of pheasant hunting. And but so we're talking hunting dogs, and I got my two pretty aggressive hunting dogs, you know. They have scared away their fair share of turkeys, I will say.
Really?
You know,
that surprises me.
They've chased many a turkey in the backyard, but we were talking, I love GSPs. You were talking about the wire hairs. I personally love GSPs, and I think that's just because I was introduced to the sweetest GSPs on earth. Like, I would stay at my buddy's place, I'd fall asleep, I'd wake up, and I would wake up not being able to breathe because I would have two enormous German short-haired pointers laying across, one across my face and one across my chest. Like,
that has not been my experience. I have the complete opposite experience. I'm like, come over here and cuddle me, dog. Like, I'm like petting them, and you can tell they just hate it. And I'm like, why don't you want to be petted?
Well, that's my thing with like working dogs. Like, I want to have like some hunting dogs I feel like you've kind of got the two categories of hunting dogs. You've got like the waterfowl and upland game dogs, and then you've got like the bloodhounds, the tracking dogs, the hog dog.
Yep.
Those dogs are tools. They're treated well. Like, this is not me being down on anyone at all, but like hounds and stuff like that, that people use for that kind of hunting. Those dogs are tools.
Right.
They're not pets. They're kept in their own kennels and this and that and separate. I feel like most people, like there's exceptions, but most people I know that have retrievers for waterfowl or for upland game, you know, or dogs for running upland game, whatever it is, those dogs sleep in the bed with those people.
Right. So we have a golden retriever right now for our hunting, and I think he struggles with being a hunting dog and being a family dog. I feel like he's kind of torn what he really wants to do, because when we're out hunting, he'll, you know, have his nose to the ground, he'll flush a bird and he'll retrieve it. But then he wants to like come back and be right next to you.
Yeah.
So he's a fantastic dog. We definitely need to get more labs in the future, just for ducks.
Well, I don't know what the mix is. I meant to tell you this earlier. I don't know what the mix is, but my sister's lab, Well, let's just say she was a little bit of a hoe.
Uh-oh.
And so suddenly there's a lot of puppies to be had. I'm not sure what the mix is or what it is, but I can always ask. Cause
is the dad a hunting dog?
They're looking probably not. they're looking to, they got a few extra puppies, and I was even looking. I'm like, they're so cute.
Aww.
I always tell people, so like I've got gonna be living on 7 acres. Have you ever seen Secondhand Lions? Do you remember that? It's Robert Duvall, Haley Joel Osment. I'm blanking on the other actor. So it's about these two crazy uncles. Their nephew comes to live with them, whatever. But on their property, they got a bunch of property. On their property, they've got this like random assortment of dogs that just runs around. And I think it's a bunch of dogs and a pig. And they all just run around together in a pack. And it's like this whole mix of like random dogs. I just want to have a giant pack of random ass dogs all over my property. Like just like 10 or 12 of them. And I want to have a couple of GSPs for upland game and for waterfowl and retrieving and all that stuff. But I just want to like rescue all the dogs in the local shelter, bring them to my property, and have like a crazy weird. So like when people come up, there's like 14 dogs. Like every movie about like some city person going into the country that you've ever seen. Like when they first pull into the driveway and like all the 80 dogs are like jumping up on the car. That's what I want.
I just don't want to see you on Hoarders.
I will not be on Hoarders. Dear Lord, I've been good. It's a struggle, but I've been getting rid of shit. But you may see me on Crazy Dog People.
Okay, if that
becomes a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, so with hunting dogs, like what do you look for when it comes to hunting dogs? Because you do a mix of both upland game and waterfowl. And
So I'm still trying to find that perfect dog. I love Goldens. They're so beautiful. They're just such great family dogs. But my perfect dog, I think, would be a small female yellow lab.
Okay.
She could do it all. She could do the pheasant. She could do the duck. She could be a great companion. She can sleep in bed with you. She can get in the truck. That would, for what we do, that would be ideal. But I also want a wire hair to point. And then I want a flushing dog to come up and flush the dog. And I love flushing dogs. They're amazing. But when you have those two working together, you get a closer shot to whatever you're hunting, which is awesome.
Well, it was cool. Like, I had never, prior to this year, I'd never done any upland game. I'd never done any waterfowl. Like, this was all a brand new experience to me. And watching the dogs work
is amazing.
The coolest thing ever.
I agree.
And like, you know, we did the waterfowl for quite a while, and you know, watching the dogs, you know, that's my favorite thing is they'd be dead asleep, and then the second they hear you flick that safety off, they are like up and they're shaking.
Ready.
They are so just like amped to get out there and chase something.
Ready to party.
And then watching them, Canadian geese are not small animals. Like, I mean, yeah, they're no elk or anything, but
packing them into the blind.
Oh, they're a hefty animal. And watching the dogs, like, lift one of those, or two of them sometimes, and, like, drag them back. That's so impressive. But then hopping over to the pheasant hunt and watching the dogs go nonstop through as you're doing a drive in front of you. Literally nonstop for like half an hour as you're walking up this field and they're going back and forth and flushing.
Yep, nose to the ground.
That was so cool to watch.
Okay, quick question. When you were duck hunting, or when you shot the geese, there usually, you know, the dogs will bring them in the blind. You wait. Mm-hmm. Did you have one come alive again in the blind?
So there was one. Well, there's a couple that kind of like flipped their shit in the blind. Like there's a couple that were flapping around a little bunch in the blind. But there was one. One of the, like, the dogs brought it back, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but effectively, I think the dogs may have been, like, trying to, I think your guys' dog and then one of Josh's dogs was, like, fighting over who got to bring it back, and so they went to separate
them. They're litter mates, by the way, so they're very competitive.
Yeah. And so they drop the goose, because the guys are, like, separating and be like, okay, calm down, like, you don't need to show off, and we're like counting the geese that we like we knew we shot. The dogs brought them all back. We're counting them, and we're like, I thought we had like 7. Why are we only counting 6? And then all of a sudden, I think I may have been the one that spotted it. I look out, I'm like, oh, because that one, like 100 yards, it flopped its ass like 100 yards away. And all of us missed it. It was like flopping along the ground, like trying to get away.
Yep.
Because we had to separate the dogs and like kind of forgot that it was there. And it just was like, peace out. I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Oh, yeah. Brothers.
Oh, my gosh. That was a lot of fun, though, because it was really cool seeing those dogs work. Like, I'd never experienced that before, and I've always been the kind of person, I'm like, I'm down to try anything. It's like elk hunting, archery hunting for elk. That's what stole my heart. Like,
right.
That's what I love. That's what I'm passionate about. But being able to do the waterfowling, the upland game, I get it now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the cool thing is, like, I feel like I get it now. I understand why people are into it. And I'm in love with that, too.
Right.
It's never going to be archery elk hunting to me. But I freaking have so much fun with that.
So I encourage a lot of women who are interested in hunting to start out upland hunting, start out duck hunting, because you'll kind of just, you'll get it. You'll go and you'll be like, wow, that was really fun. Or maybe you'll hate it. But most women like it. And then it kind of builds from there. Then you're like, well, I kind of want to shoot a deer. Well, I kind of want to shoot an elk. Mm-hmm. And maybe you just stay at upland hunting, but typically it goes on from there. It's a great way to start.
Well, I think for women, for anyone that has never been hunting before, that wants to just find out if it's right for them.
Right.
It's a low impact way to do it.
Yep.
I mean, you know, even if you're buying everything, most places you can go, you can do an outfitted trip and they'll, everything from the vest to the shotgun to the, you literally just have to show up in a pair of boxer shorts.
And yeah. Like,
preferably pants. but you know, you're covered. You can kind of do as much or as little as you want. But even if you want to buy everything, can't you buy a cheap vest from Sportsman's for 15 bucks? You get a shotgun for 250, 300 bucks. And I mean, albeit good luck finding shells now, even nowadays.
We stocked up on shells. We bought pallets of shells because it's like, what's the point of having a duck hunting business if you can't buy shotgun shells?
It's like, I mean, that you for a while, that was the only thing you could buy. Now you can't even freaking find shotgun shells anywhere.
Right.
But it's a low impact way. The tags are usually pretty inexpensive. The seasons are long. There's tons of opportunity. If it's something you're going to go do by yourself, it's reasonably doable by yourself.
I agree.
Compared to like an elk. A dumbass is going to go on a solo archery elk hunt for his first ever hunt. I don't know who'd do that. But like compared to that, waterfowling upland game is so accessible.
Yeah.
There's tons of places you can go without a dog, without a blind, without anything. And you can go dove hunting.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and they're good to eat. And you know, it's easy to breast them out. You watch a YouTube video. It's super easy to do. You cook them. They're, in my opinion, delicious. I love pheasants. I love grouse. I love chucker. I love dove. There, it's all good. So it's just a great way to start. And maybe, you know, it's a great way to be.
It has opened up new doors for me. And again, it extends your season.
Mm.
Like it allows you, because I don't know a ton of people. Yes, we all live for September. Let's face it. Like, nobody's going to argue. If you hunt, you live for September, maybe for East Coast, October. But I think we're all passionate about hunting. If we could do this 24/7, we would.
Yep.
And being able to do stuff like that, and that's why I love, like, predator, like, going coyote hunting or even just jacks or whatever it is.
Yep.
You know, being able to go out and hunt year round, always have an opportunity to take something. And I'm the weirdo. I'm like, I will skin a coyote. I'll throw that in a crock pot. I'll eat that nasty thing.
You will not.
I guarantee. I've got my buddy. He's a California guy. Of course he is. Jeremiah Dowdy. He's a wild game chef from field to plate. He has an excellent, it is one of the best recipes I have. I use it on venison neck roasts. I've used it on javelina backstraps. But he has a recipe for bobcat coyote barbacoa.
What?
Yep. Yep. He designed it for bobcat and coyote. So if you can turn cat and dog into something tasty,
no,
it's good for a lot of stuff. It's great for venison neck roast because it's just something you throw in the crop. Like, I don't bother trying to, like, piece out and grind the necks. I literally just chop the base of the head, bottom of the back straps, take that whole neck roast, throw it in a crock pot with all these spices, and you've got barbacoa for, like, taco bowls and taco night for a month.
Interesting.
It is so good. So stinking good.
I'll try it, but just don't tell me what it is beforehand.
I'll have to,
Can you get toxoplasmosis from, like, a mountain lion or a bobcat?
I don't know. I mean,
that's something to think about when you're eating these things.
I'm a firm believer that you cook anything enough. And I mean, this thing, like, I mean, I'm talking, you're putting this in the crock pot for like 12 hours. Like, I mean, again, we're talking bobcats and coyotes. So these things are going to be tough. Like, no one's saying they're not going to be tough. But, You're cooking the shit out of these.
cooking out the toxoplasmosis.
And I'm going to be honest. I really don't know what toxoplasmosis.
You're not a cat person. I think we're drinking too much. My words are starting.
Yeah. I'm on my third cold smoke right now. And about two of these, I've had a nice buzz for the last 20 minutes. Right? Toxoplasmosis.
Yes.
No, I mean, I should, more things I should admit, controversial things. I do love cats. I grew up with a cat. I grew up with a cat and a dog.
Yeah.
And I also grew up with an orange tabby that basically was a dog. It was not like the aloof, nasty cat. This thing was like the cat that would come up and, like, if you were sick, would, like, come up and crawl into your lap and, like, lay with you. Right. It was just this fat orange. It looked like a stray cat half of the time. Tabby. So that was the cat I grew. Those are the kind of cats I like. The little shithead ones that are going to, like, scratch you up when you, like, if you pet them three times instead of two times. Right. Like, I don't condone animal abuse, but I would punt one of those things across a room. Well, it's all coming out after the, on the third, third cold smoke.
I don't know. I think maybe we should Google it.
Toxoplasmosis?
Because you can get, what is it, trichinosis from a bear.
Yeah, but if a bear has trichinosis, you can cook that out. Like, if you cook, that's why you never eat, like, medium rare bear. You always eat well done bear.
A couple of times, but all I can think about is getting sick when I eat it. So, like, I can't really, like, get over it.
See, though, like, so I was telling you about my friends, Ryan and Hillary Lampers. They're out in Three Forks, stealthy hunter. He's been on the podcast a few times. We actually did a podcast. The last one I did with him was about bear hunting. Mm. Bear is their favorite meat.
Really?
Hands down favorite meat. They love hunting bear. Love eating, hunting. I think he takes a couple of bears. He goes to Idaho, takes one or two.
You know what's crazy? In Idaho, you can bait for them. And you legally do not have to take it.
Nope.
Crazy. Montana is, like, totally opposite of that.
Oh, yeah. Montana, you, like,
if have you, a little ritual after you shoot it.
If you take a goose, if you just breast out a goose, you're, like, wanton waste right there. Like,
right.
That was it. And I think they've even made the laws stricter this year.
Okay, I thought they made the laws less strict.
I can't remember. I haven't been hunting, I haven't looked. But somebody, I think it may have just been my friend's commentary that I was reading. I think he was just bitching about people, like, why don't you take them? It may have been Jeremiah Dowdy. It may have been that wild game chef because he was talking about cooking the legs.
Okay.
The legs and the thigh. It may have been him or another. I've got a few chef friends that are hunters.
Okay.
I'll have to look at that. But I mean, I know for a fact it's, you can't, with the Canadas, because they're a certain size, you're supposed to take the legs and thighs too.
Same with pheasants, but I think they changed it. They passed legislation this year where you do not have to take the legs.
Interesting. It's, and I mean, let's face, like, I don't know a ton of people that sit and process their pheasants out in the field. Like, maybe you pluck them, but
I love pheasants. I prefer it over chicken. I'll cook it all. I don't care.
Oh no. Like, without a doubt. I'm just saying, like, I think most people just throw them all in a bag and then go process them when they get home. Probably. And then this is, again, not me condoning wanton ways. Somebody, please don't fucking send me an email. I'm just saying, like, who's really going to get on your case? Like, if you're in your apartment, you're processing your pheasant, and you're like, I don't want to deal with these legs right now. Like, I think at that point, it's the equivalent of throwing away some ground beef. But,
right.
Again, use as much of the animal. And I'm, like, the first guy to say, like, any animal I take home, like, if I can pack home the bones, I do. And I make bone broth. Yep. My freezer is full of bone broth.
Yep.
Ooh. Dear Lord. Punching my microphone. I'm getting really aggressive with my gestures right now. That's what happens. We're having a couple of beers. These are the best podcasts. These are my favorite podcasts.
Oh, my
little social lubrication. But, like, I've got so much bone broth.
Did you just say social lubrication?
Social lubrication. Yes.
I've not heard that before. Okay, on the waste thing, I got to throw this out there.
Okay.
I did a podcast a couple weeks ago. I offered the same thing. If you want pheasant tails, send me a DM, Kara_YellowSally. I will mail them to you. To tie flies. So I work with a lot of, being in the fly fishing industry, obviously people always want them. But I think as long as it's in the United States, I can mail them and there's no issue. I think if I was like to go try to mail to Canada, it'd get, I don't really know what the details are around that.
It gets weird.
So if
Canadians are weird anyways. I'm just, yeah.
Your future wife could be a Canadian.
I mean, who knows?
You're right there.
And I know I've got a lot of Canadian listeners and former and Canadian guests. And so I'm still going to talk crap about you guys, but I love you. I love you all.
But yeah, so we shoot a lot of pheasants. The guys can't take them home. We have a lot of pheasant tails. I love them. They're beautiful. I decorate my house with them. But I have a lot of extra, and I would love to see them go to good use, and I'd love to see the flies.
See, now that is something I am terrified to get into.
You should be. It's terrible.
Because I know it will take over my life.
No.
I love that kind of stuff.
Really? It's tedious.
Oh, I love that little, like, if I can, like, learn to do something for myself and, like, be part of that whole process. And so I'm a huge Dungeons & Dragons video game nerd, believe it or not.
I don't even know what that is.
Dungeons & Dragons?
I thought it was a board game.
Yeah, it is. Like, you sit around a table and you roll dice and you say, like, I cast Fireball.
Never played it.
I hit the ogre.
Nerd.
Oh, I'm a huge nerd. Like, it's ridiculous. And so if anybody wants to start a D&D game, just hit me up. shoot a DM to the Wild Initiative. but I love that nerdy stuff. So there's this thing. I'm going way down the rabbit hole now. It's called Warhammer. And it was like this tabletop game where you have all these miniatures and you build these armies, but they're these like little plastic, just gray plastic miniatures, but you paint them and, you know, you add all this detail and they're like, we're talking like a 1-inch tall miniature.
Okay.
There's like, I was never super good at it, but I loved painting these miniatures and like spending hours on one little thing, like with this teeny ass little brush that's like three little.
It was
wild.
Yeah.
I never played the damn game. I just painted the miniatures.
Really?
Never once played the game. I just thought the miniatures were so cool and I love painting it. That's why I'm terrified to ever start tying flies, because I will never fly fish again if I start tying flies. I will just tie flies all day long.
Well, you could. There's some pretty quick ones. Like worms, easy, done.
Well, and even my buddy Corey with Birch Barrel, I sat down, I went on a float trip with him last summer.
Okay.
I want to say. And it was my last visit to Montana before I came up for hunting season. And we went on a float trip, and I remember before that trip, I was hanging out with him. We were having a couple of beers at his place, and he was just tying, I think he was just tying like rubber legs or something. Fairly simple. And I was watching him, and he probably knocked out three or four of them in like half an hour that we were talking. Like,
yep.
He was just kind of in his zone doing it. And it was cool to watch. And that was, I did not need to start tying flies.
I have a lot of respect for people who tie flies. My ADD kicks in and I'm wrapping things 100 times and then just picking up the whole vise and just throwing it across the room. So.
Why is there a dent in the drywall? I was tying flies, okay?
Exactly. I've tied a couple of streamers. Like, I've just powered my way through it, and they look terrible.
I feel like it also depends on the... Because here's the other thing. You talk fly... Let's talk fly fishing now for a minute. I mean, because why not? We've talked about everything in this podcast, and we're back to fly fishing. There are as many flies, and almost different... As many types of fly fishing, because, you know, we all... You say fly fishing, and to most people, you get visions of Brad Pitt in A River Runs Through It, you know, false casting for like half an hour before he gets to that exact spot. Like, it's this beautiful art form, and it's, you know, only dry flies, and, you know, it's perfectly lighting on the water. That's what people picture when we talk fly fishing. There are so many, I mean, you're on a float trip and you're throwing streamers. There's not a ton of difference between that and fishing a lure.
I agree.
Like, fishing nymphs, especially if you're fishing with, oh my God, an indicator. I was like, I was about to call it a bobber, which don't
how
you dare
call, you call how it dare a bobber.
It's like, you know, you're fishing a nymph with an indicator.
You're
how
being
different
natural.
Is it?
It's different.
I'm not saying it's exactly the same.
Right.
There's different processes. There's a lot of differences to it.
Yeah.
But it's not as foreign, I think, as people build it up to be. And it's not this different thing. And so, like, when we talk about tying flies, you say tying flies. You could be tying this, like, minuscule little nymph, beadhead nymph. Or you could be tying this giant, like, mouse streamer thing.
Yeah, mousing.
Oh, my gosh. Those things... I've talked about this before, too. We got some weird names for flies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you go, I had a buddy, I was like, Corey. He was like, okay. I'm like, okay, what flies do I need to pick up for this trip? He's like, all right, you know, pick out cat puke and this and that and the other. And I'm like, there's a 50% chance he's just effing with me right now. Right. And I'm going to walk in and it's going to be like asking for blinker fluid.
Exactly. Right. But it's real.
I kind of wish he had sent me in because that would have been really funny. But I walked in. I was like super cautious. I'm like, I need this. No reaction. And this. No reaction. And a cat puke. And no reaction. They're like, oh, yeah. So we'll take you over here. I'm like, those are all real things?
So there is a lot of controversy about the names of flies and how they're so sexualized now that women are getting into the industry. It does not hurt my feelings. I'm not one of those people who gets easily offended. I think it's pretty funny when I'm like, here's your purple chubby, you know, to a client. And they look at me like, wait, what did she just say?
I'm trying to think of some of the more offensive ones. Like, I actually...
Sex dungeon.
Yes, I've heard of sex dungeon. I went through and I actually took an afternoon and I was like, there has to be a website dedicated to offensive fly names. And I found a few that were like really weird fly names.
That's the dog.
And there is my dog. I'm sure there's probably a fly fishing fly named after that sound.
Are you okay?
I have a Boston Terrier, and she has a short nose, and she makes weird noises
and
sometimes.
And she's 14 years old.
Yeah, she's also 14. Basically, everything's wrong with her. I love her. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, like...
Nipple piercing.
Really? I haven't heard that one.
Yeah.
Chubby Chernobyls. There's... there's got to be a list somewhere, weird fly name. I found many websites that list off, like, awkward fly names, but...
Those are just the first few that come to mind that I use normally.
The cat puke was my favorite.
That's good. I haven't used that one.
And then the best part is you pull it out and you're like, oh, I get it. Like, you look at it and you're like, cat puke. Oh, it makes total sense why they call it this. Anyway. Okay. So, folks want to find Yellow Sally online. Where are they looking?
YellowSallyFishing.com.
YellowSallyFishing.com. And on Instagram, it's for you, it's Kara underscore Yellow Sally.
Yes.
And Yellow Sally Fishing, it has its own Instagram as well, right?
Yes. And so I use my Yellow Sally Fishing. I, you know, try to post fun fishing pictures, all of that. But you can shop directly from the posts. It'll link you right to my website. We take PayPal, all of the, you know, major credit cards. And that is just Yellow Sally Fishing.
Perfect. So one of the big things Yellow Sally focuses on is really we kind of touched on this for a second. It's introducing young women, especially, to the outdoors. That is a huge passion of yours, and getting girls into fly fishing and introducing them to that. So say you run into someone and you know, you end up talking to them and you start talking about fly fishing. They're like, you know, I've always, maybe it's a woman, or maybe it's anyone, and they're like, hey, I've always wanted to get into fly fishing or the outdoors or this or that, or I want to introduce my kid to fly fishing. I think they would love it. I think it'd be good for them, but they just don't even know where to start. What kind of advice or words of wisdom would you get to just get someone started into the outdoors or fly fishing or hunting or any of this?
So I have a 3-year-old. And I obviously want him to be into fly fishing and hunting and all of that. I've taken him fishing a couple of times. I keep it very short and very sweet. He's still terrified of fish. So, you know, I want to get cute pictures of him holding the fish, but he's just not really into it. But I mean, our float trips with him, they're about an hour. So I would say keep everything short and sweet to start.
You mean you're not going on the 8-hour... like long river float trips?
That sounds like a nightmare.
With your effectively toddler?
No. But, you know, I see some people on Instagram that do it, and I'm like, that's so awesome. But I think for the majority of us, it's probably not going to happen.
Let's also be realistic here. They take about 3 pictures. They get the good picture. Probably about 6 out of those 8 hours, that child is asleep in a pile of life vests.
Yes.
In the bottom of that boat.
Well, my 3-year-old will not nap, so that's also an issue.
That's a problem.
Yeah. So yeah, short and sweet. I talked to another mom on Instagram who takes her kids all the time, and she'll bring a tablet. She's like, then I can fish and have fun. For me personally, I like going out without my kid. I hope he loves
you
it.
You terrible mother. Oh, for shame.
I know. But I'm like, well, I'm not super upset that he's not really into it yet. When he can row a boat, he can come with me whenever he wants.
I had a kid. What's that? I've heard a lot of people be like, yeah, I had a kid, so I'd have in 18 years, I'd have a DD. Or in 16 years, I'd have a DD.
Yeah, kind of the same idea.
It's like,
yeah.
Hey, you know, I got a kid, so in about, you know, whatever, 10, 12 years, I'd have someone to row the boat on float trips for me.
Yep. I'm going to get him like a little raft. You know, they have all those cute little rafts now. I'm going to get him one of those, and he'll row me around. I'll fish and drink beer, listen to music, and...
There you go. There you go. Make sure he can drive the shuttle vehicle, you know, at 16.
That would be ideal.
That's like,
yeah,
that's the money. That's the money right there.
Yep.
Gosh, maybe I'll just adopt a 16-year-old.
Like, bad idea. Yeah.
Could you imagine? Guess what?
I'm moving to Haver and I have a 16-year-old son.
You're going to... adopt some poor kid. You're into fly fishing now. You have no choice. You're gonna drive shuttle vehicles and row a boat for the rest of your life.
He might be into Dungeons and Dragons.
Who knows? I'll roll some D&D games with him. I'm super down. Wow. So this podcast I'm not sure there's many topics we haven't touched on. Do we want to talk about politics and even more politics and religion? Like.
No.
I mean, we could. Trying to think, you know, I'm sure we could make it more controversial if we wanted, but I think at this point, maybe we'll just sit back, we'll finish our beers, and we'll call it an evening.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you coming down again. Milestone. I've actually had like a official Wild Initiative studio recorded podcast for the first time ever.
Awesome. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, y'all, that'll do it. I don't even know how to end my podcast anymore these days. I'm a little buzzing. All right, y'all, that'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com to get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. Big thank you to Kara for hopping on. Y'all, that'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time, but until then, I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. And head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.